europea. Given the heightened secular nature of the day, to discuss a topic that relates both to the applicability of secular law and also of an inyan relating very much to the parasha of getting married, since we're also in a season, it seems that there are certain seasons of the year in which there are a larger amount of chasanis to attend, and this particular time of year is a busy season for chasanis at the yeshiva as well. So therefore, today we're going to discuss a topic relating to the applicability of secular law with respect to the prenuptial agreement that couples within our yeshiva community are signing more and more when they enter into the framework of marriage, and how do these secular norms impact upon halachic norms with respect to the marriage relationship. For those who are not familiar, in my previous life, before coming to the yeshiva, I served as the director of the Menahel of the Beis Din of America, which is a Beis Din that adjudicates disputes and does gittin, and also promulgated a prenuptial agreement that was based upon the Tanoim Achronim of the Nachla Shiva, who lived a few hundred years ago, that basically was intended to provide for, number one, a framework for preventing aguna situations down the road. If chas v'shalom there was a breakup in a marriage and a person, and a husband in particular, was obstinate in refusing to give a get, that this would provide the appropriate halakhic incentives for a get not to be improperly withheld. And secondly, to provide for an explicit haskama, explicit agreement between the tzadim, that they would agree that in the event of a dispute, they would go to a Beis Din to resolve disputes, certainly relating to any get issues, also relating to any ksuva issues, tanayim issues, and ideally, api halacha, to really resolve all issues relating to any disputes that could arise, given the reality of divorce within the universe in which we live, and the reality that whenever there is that type of a dispute, it requires very often some sort of court intervention. There is a prohibition according to halacha of going to secular courts, and one is supposed to go to Beis Din. And therefore, this agreement provides that the parties will go to a particular Beis Din, and the Beis Din will adjudicate the dispute. So this raises two kind of conceptual issues. One is, what are the parameters of when one is obligated to go to Beis Din? And one of the parameters also of how the Beis Din should be deciding the dispute. Because one of the big issues as to why it is that there became more of a proliferation of the violation of parties going to secular court was based upon the following orientation that they had, which is that we live in a society where everybody knows when it's New Year's Day, where we're surrounded by all kinds of secular norms and secular practices. And therefore, even when people within the yeshiva community, a good, nice YU boy and a nice stern girl, get married, often their expectation in the way that they live their married life is more in accordance with secular norms than it is in accordance with halachic norms. My own experience was that when couples would get divorced at the end of the process, when we would ask the wife, so do you want to collect the ksuva? Generally the response would be, over 99% of the time, no, I'm not specifically focused on the ksuva, because we're just resolving our monetary issues in the normal course with lawyers and so forth, so therefore my focus isn't specifically on what the halachic disposition of the marriage would typically be. So to what degree is this legitimate? Is this as illegitimate as the notion of going to the secular courts? So the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim, Ve'elu Mishpatim Shetosim Lifneihem, that these are the laws that are placed in front of them. Lifneihem are talking about the judges, are talking about the dayanim that were appointed in Parshas Yisro and who have all kinds of responsibilities in Parshas Mishpatim. And the Gemara derives in Gittin Lifneihem v'lo Lifnei Akum, that you're supposed to go in front of Jewish dayanim and not in front of secular courts. There's also a derivation from this pasuk, lifneihem v'lo lifnei hadyotos. You're supposed to go in front of qualified dayanim who are well versed in halacha, and not in front of hadyotos, not in front of just your people on the street, who while they may be Jewish, it's true, and they're not, they don't constitute a secular court, but they're completely unlearned. They have no jurisdiction to compel you to show up to Beis Din. So the Ramban on that pasuk points out that there is a fundamental distinction between the drasha of lifneihem v'lo lifnei akum on the one hand, and the drasha of lifneihem v'lo lifnei hadyotos on the other hand. With respect to lifneihem v'lo lifnei hadyotos, the Ramban points out that there's a principle in halacha that people can be mekabel upon themselves that which they're not obligated to do. So even though a person is only obligated to go to an esteemed Beis Din, that's the established Beis Din, the community, it's made up of appropriate dayanim. Nonetheless, if people want to accept upon themselves Shlosha Roi Bakar, they want to accept upon themselves three unlearned shepherds in the field. We have a tradition of shepherds throughout our legacy. It's a proud tradition, right? We see in this week's parsha the Yosef's brothers are presented as Roi Tzon in front of Paro. But in the Gemara, we talk about the Roi Bakar, so they weren't always such learned people. They didn't have a brother Yehuda, the Holos Lefano, to establish a yeshiva before they came, so they didn't have the same level of learning. But nonetheless, a person wants to be mekabel upon himself. They want to be accept upon themselves unlearned hadyotos to decide the case. They have the prerogative to do so. But when it comes to lifnei akum, says the Ramban, when it comes to the prohibition against going in front of a secular court, so even if both parties, both litigants, in this case the husband and the wife, both say together that we're prepared to go in front of a secular court, it's awesome. It's prohibited. They're not allowed to be mekabel upon themselves to go in front of a secular court. Therefore, it's essential to tell them you have to go in front of a Beis Din. But can they then turn to the Beis Din and say, look, we understand that we have a complete obligation to go before Beis Din, but on the other hand, it's our expectation that our monetary affairs will be decided in accordance with secular norms, in accordance with what would normally be done by the secular courts. So New York State, you have this system of allocation of assets, which is known as equitable distribution. So they want us, they go in front of the Beis Din, and they say, we want you to paskin according to equitable distribution. So is that also a violation of the lifneihem v'lo lifnei akum on some level? And if you look at the shtar berurim in the binding arbitration agreement of the Beis Din of America, which was approved by leading poskim, including Rabbi Yosef and Rizam Nechemya Goldberg, you will see that the options that are present in the agreement grant the husband and wife the opportunity to take upon themselves that they will have all their disputes, should they, God forbid, end up getting divorced, resolved by the Beis Din, including all of their monetary disputes, and that they have the option to say either that the Beis Din will decide in accordance with its normal principles, or the parties agree the Beis Din is authorized to decide any monetary disputes, including division of property that may arise between them, based on principles of equitable distribution law currently employed in the United States, as found in the Uniform Marriage and Divorce Act. So, are you allowed to do this? Well, clearly we hold you are allowed to do this. But this actually is the subject of some dispute. There's a journal a Torah journal called Yeshurun, which is very popular. It's put out by a fellow named Gottesman who lives on the Upper West Side. It's a very very fine, very fat journal. Comes out a couple of times a year, and it publishes essays from Gedolim from the past and Gedolim from the present, and there's an exchange in one of the volumes, I think volume Yud Aleph, of Yeshurun between two luminaries in Eretz Yisrael, Zalman and Nechemya Goldberg, Shlita, and Rav Tzvi Gartner. Tzvi Gartner is the mechaber of the Sefer Kfiya Beget, which talks about all of the issues as to what constitutes improper or proper coercion with respect to the giving of a get. It's a good sefer just to look at connection with learning Maseches Gittin. So Zalman Nechemya Goldberg basically had offered the following advice. He said, you have all of these women who are suspicious, perhaps even men as well, who might be suspicious or wary of going to Beis Din because they feel that there are certain rights and privileges that they enjoy under the secular law scheme that are more consistent with what their marital expectations are, and therefore they don't want to go to Beis Din, so they're violating the prohibition that the Ramban says is non-negotiable, right, of going to secular court instead of going to Beis Din. So he suggested, he said, look, I have a wonderful idea as to how to get everybody to go to Beis Din. Just provide them with the option to select in the agreement to go to Beis Din. The Beis Din will decide in accordance with the principles of secular law. So Tzvi Gartner wrote a letter saying, how could you do such a thing? Is this not also in violation of the Torah's requirement that you have to follow Torah law? To which Zalman Nechemya Goldberg basically responded saying, no, I think it's okay, parties can do whatever they want when it comes to monetary matters. So what's going on over here? What's the sugya? So the sugya here that is being discussed and deliberated and disputed is the sugya Masna Adam Mashikosu B'Toyra. This appears in Baba Metzia, Daf Nun Vav, and Ksuvas Daf Nun, excuse me, Baba Metzia Daf Nun Alf, and Ksuvas Daf Nun Vav, and Baba Metzia Daf Tzadi Dalid, and Makos Daf Gimel. There are multiple sugya, Baba Basav Daf Kof Chav Vav Baba Beis, multiple sugyas discussing Machlokis, Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Huda about Masha Kosta B'Torah. What does that mean? A person has the right to make a tnai. You can make various conditions. You have working conditions that an employer and employee decide what time of day are you going to begin working, what time of day do you have to stop working, how long is your lunch hour going to be. So people are allowed to make all kinds of tnaim. Just like the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven made a tonight with Moshe Rabbeinu about what land they would be able to get, the Be'er HaYarden, we have an institution that we find in the Torah called tonight. But what if the tonight that people make militates against something which is in the Torah? So we have a principle, you can't make a tonight against something which is in the Torah. I can't have a transaction with you in which I make a tonight that you're going to have to eat pig fat, that you're going to have to eat chazir. We can't make a tonight that we're going to violate Shabbos. We can't make a tonight even that we're going to have a transaction which I charge you ribbis, that I charge you prohibited interest. Why can't I make a tonight? Because I'm not the bialim over these mitzvahs. The Kodesh Baruch Hu requires us to abide by certain mitzvahs, by certain obligations. We're not the bialim, we're not the owners to be able to override those obligations, to overlook those obligations. So therefore, this is a violation, and anyone who is masna mashikosu b'tayra, tina'o batel, the tanai would be batel if you're masna mashikosu b'tayra. So, both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda essentially agree with this proposition with respect to a dava shebe iser. So dava shebe iser, so you have no control over that which is completely usur, whether you like it or not, those isurim are in effect. You cannot waive Shabbos, you cannot waive Kashrus, those isurim are in effect. But there's a machlokis between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about whether you can be masna mashikosu b'tayra b'dovashim b'momon. So for example, a man wants to betroth a woman, and he says, "Hare, I'm a gudeshishli, you're hereby betrothed to me, I'm a nasha ein lach alai shir ksus v'oina." That you are betrothed to me on condition that I am not going to have, that you cannot claim from me an obligation of sheruksus. Sheruksus, or what? That normally a husband has to provide clothing and food for his wife, so I'll be, I will be somehow exempted from the obligation of providing food and clothing to you. The woman agrees. So according to Rabbi Meir, this is no good. This doesn't work. The Kiddushin is chal, but the Tanai is not. And the husband is still obligated to provide share. Susan, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's perfectly fine. This is okay for the husband to do. So that's Masa Adam Mashikasa B'Torah. We have the famous Mishnah in Bava Metzia on Daf Tzadi Dalet Amin Aleph. The Mishnah says that a shomer that a shomer chinam can absolve himself of the of his obligation. What's his obligation? That if he's not chayav b'gneiva ba'aveda, if an object that he's watching gets stolen or lost, but he has to take a shavua, so he can absolve himself of his chiyuv to take a shavua, and a shoel can be absolved of his chiyuv that if an accident should happen to the object, then he would normally be chayav, so he can become pater from that obligation. And the Gemara says that this appears also to be consistent with the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, right? It appears to be consistent with the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a person can make a tanaya davashib and mamon, call tanaya amasa mashikasa b'tayra b'davashib and mamon tana'o kayim. The tanaya is kayim, so this explains how the shomim are allowed to make a tanai when they receive a property to safeguard that they will be patur from their normal obligations. So the Gemara there says that this is actually a question as to whether this is only going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Mishnah there, at the end of the Mishnah, says a person is not allowed to be Masna Mashikasa B'Torah. So the Mishnah says, so the Gemara says, well, who is the person who has the Svara that you're not allowed to be Masna Mashikasa B'Torah, that the Tanai is Batil? It's Rabbi Meir who has that Svara. So therefore, how could you say the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara has two terutzim. One teretz that the Gemara gives is that the Mishnah is, in fact, going like Rabbi Yehuda. And when the Mishnah says that Amasa Mashikasa B'Torah Tano Batil, it's talking about a Dava She'enel Shamam and a Dava She'lisser. And the other answer that the Gemara gives is that even Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that in certain circumstances a person can be Masa Mashikasa B'Torah B'Dava She'memamon and it will be good. And it doesn't quite explain when you would differentiate between when it's good and when it's not good. But the Gemara says, in this particular case, all that's going on is that I have a person entrusting another, Reuven's entrusting Shimon with an object, and Reuven has certain rights to demand the shvu of Shimon, to demand payment of Shimon. Reuven is Meichel, so a person, Mechile is allowed. You can always be Meichel your rights, according to your monetary rights. You can always be Meichel, even according to Rabbi Meir. You can be Meichel your monetary rights. And the Gemara goes on to say that just like it works in the direction of Mechila, this the Tanai works in the direction of Hischaivus, where, for example, a Shomachinam can say that ordinarily I would not be Chayev for Onsin. I would not be Chayev if I have an object and a complete accident happens to the object, but I undertake that I will be chayev even for onsen. I will be chayev even if something untoward happens to the object accidentally. I accept upon myself a chiyuv, and this is consistent with the notion that a person can accept upon himself a hischaivus that he doesn't otherwise have. According to halacha, if Reuven says to Shimon, I am chayev myself to you $1,000,000, even though we can't find any rhyme or reason why Reuven would be chayev $1,000,000 to Shimon, nonetheless, Reuven becomes chayev by being mechayev himself to pay $1,000,000. That generates a chiyuv for Reuven to pay Shimon $1,000,000. He then becomes chayev alpi halacha. So we can understand that when we're dealing with the halacha lifneim lo lifnei akum, that you're not allowed to go to a non-Jewish court. To a secular court? What's the reason for that? So the Rambam explains, Yemeirim Yad B'Toyres Moshe Rabbeinu, that it's considered almost an act of blasphemy, a heresy, that you are indicating that our Torah is Chas V'Shalom insufficient to be able to resolve all of the problems and all of the disputes and all of the issues that we have when we have a Torah Shlema that addresses everything. So therefore it is an act of tremendous disrespect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and also an act of, as Rashi says on Parshas Mishpatim, it's like you're Meyakir Elilim, you are raising to a level of deification the grandeur of systems other than Halacha. So we understand this is in the realm of Issa V'Heter, so both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir would presumably agree that this would be Masa Mashikasa B'Tayva B'Dava Shebe Isser, and this is why, in fact, it's Paskin B'Shulchan Aruch that even if two litigants, in this case our husband and wife, agreed between themselves that they're going to go to secular court, that is considered to be a non-binding tonight, that is considered to be a condition which is null and void as contrary to Torah obligation. Contrary to Torah policy. You cannot do this. But what if the parties simply want to say, well, we are prepared to go to Beis Din, but we want Beis Din to apply secular principles. So is this in fact a Dovah Shebe Isser, or is this a Dovah Shebe Mamon when you're dealing with, in fact, a monetary laws? So here you will find the machlokes between the Tzvi Gartner, Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, that you will find in Yeshurun, you will find the same machlokes elsewhere. You'll find, for example, what according to the Sefer Minchas Tzvi. So Minchas Tzvi is a sefer written by a contemporary diner, Tzvi Spitz. So Minchas Tzvi talks about the following scenario. I have two people who live in Israel, and this is what's called the Chok HaMekarkoyin in Israel, which is basically their real estate statutes. So Chok HaMekarkoyin tells you all of the laws, what happens if you get involved in a real estate transaction, which are not necessarily consistent with what the Torah laws would be with respect to every single detail of real estate transactions. But on the other hand, of all monetary principles that people can presumably take upon themselves, b'toras tonight. So he was asked the question, what if seller and buyer want to enter into a contract and they want to say, we incorporate all the provisions of the Chok HaMekarkoyin in our contract. It's a secular chok. It's not a halakha chok. It's a secular law. We'll assume that all of the secular legal system within Israel is not in fact based upon halakha. It's based upon English law, Ottoman law, other legal systems. So is this a violation on some level to do this? So he says that, well, in his opinion, this is a machlokes between the Taz and the Sma. If you look in Simen Chav Bav in Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpat, so the Taz seems to critique the Sma. The Sma really has a very unusual opinion, which he seems to even indicate that in certain types of cases where parties want to contract as to a particular arrangement, and a Beis Din would be incapable of enforcing that arrangement, that then the parties are allowed to go to secular court, and the Taz disagrees with the Sma, but then the Taz adds, and I also disagree with the notion that the parties can accept upon themselves any kind of law which is contrary to Din Torah. So the Minchas Tzvi understands the Sma holds you allowed to contract to a particular monetary provision which is contrary to Din Torah, and according to the Taz, you're not allowed to do this, and he says that we should really follow the Taz, and therefore the parties are not allowed to place into their contract that they're following the Chok HaMekarkoyin. So he says, but the Chok HaMekarkoyin consists of 50 provisions, and every single one of those provisions is a normal monetary tanai that people would be able to make if they were not specifically referencing secular law. Then can't they reference those specific provisions? So he says, yeah, sure, they can reference those specific provisions. They just can't say we're following the Chok HaMekarkoyin. They say they're following the Chok HaMekarkoyin, so it sounds like they want to follow secular law. But if you just say we want it to be that we have to close only on Tuesdays or Thursdays, and that the down payment will be 8%, and that you'll only get the down payment back upon the following five conditions, not the other. So every single provision can be exactly the same as the Chok HaMekarkoyin. The Chok HaMekarkoyin is 50 pages, so you got to write down all 50 pages and make no reference to the Chok HaMekarkoyin, and then you'd have a valid contract. You just leave out the words Chok HaMekarkoyin. It's just you have to waste a lot more paper. So instead of being able to write, we want the Chok HaMekarkoyin, you just copy over the entire statute and leave out the lead line that this is from the secular statute, and that, he says, would be perfectly okay. To which Ritzvi Gardner, in his essay in Yeshurun, says he doesn't understand this at all, because in the Machlokes Ma and Taz, you don't see any reference to specific allusions to secular law. It's either you can do this or you can't do this. But if it's a problem to accept upon yourself secular law, actually he quotes a Rashba, if it's a problem to quote it, to take upon yourself secular law, then it shouldn't matter whether you reference the statute or not. And if it's not a problem, then presumably you could reference the statute. You had a question? Yeah, the Chazon Ish says it's even worse. The Chazon Ish in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Siman Tes Vav, Besifa Dalet, says that when you have a Jewish country which is made up but purely of Yehudim, who have the ability to take upon themselves a system of law which is purely halacha, which is purely based upon Shulchan Aruch and Meforshim and so forth, and they don't do so, he says that is the ultimate Heirim Yabitaris Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the worst form of what he calls a violation of Lifneim Lo Lifnei Hadyotis. So that doesn't quite work. So we'll assume we'll treat that as regular secular law. So in reality, if you go back even further and further, you see that this actually is truly a machlokis between the Ksos and the Mishnah Lamelech, and deeper down is a machlokis between the Rashba and the Ramban. The Mishnah Lamelech says as follows: the Mishnah Lamelech in Hilchos Ishus Perek Bav Halacha Yud says, what if, says we paskin, how do we paskin? With respect, first of all, to this whole machlokis Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So what would you say? Machlokis Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, how do we paskin? Gemara Neirubin. Daf Mem Vav, Amin Beis. You pass like Rabbi Yehuda. Whenever it's a machlokas, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. So the Beis Yosef spells this out in case there was any question or ambiguity, and Evan Ezra, Simon Lamed Ches, the Beis Yosef says, in this dispute, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, because it's Yadua, as the Gemara says in Erevin, that the halacha is always like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda disagree, and therefore you can, in fact, make a Tanai, Adavash and Mashikasa, Betoira, Bedavash and Mammon, so the, even if you're arranging for a different scheme of what the Torah says, right, that the Torah says that you're a Shai Mechinam and you're not Chayef for Gnei Vaveda, you can accept it by yourself to be Chayef, you're a Shai Mesachar, so you're Yechayev for Gneva Baveda, you can accept upon yourself to be Potter as long as both parties agree. You can be Masne, Mashikosa B'Toira, there's no question, even if that's only going like Rabbi Yehuda, so we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Similarly, if a man gets married to a woman and he says, Amenash Ein Lach Alai Sheik Suis Be'oina, he says that I have no obligation of Sheik Suis, so we paskin, Halach Alamaisa, Shulchan Aruch, Eben Ezra, Lamaches, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that the husband is not chayev b'sher u'kitzus. All right. Now, it's interesting. There's a little bit of a question about oina. We only pask like Rabbi Yehuda. We assumes Rashi with respect to sher u'kitzus. When it comes to oina, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. Everybody would agree. Says Rashi that you can't waive oina. Oina is not a davar shebimamon. Oina is an intimate relationship requirement a husband has towards a wife. That's non-waivable, says Rashi, and therefore the husband is still chayev be'oina. It happens that the Yerushalmi seems to say otherwise. The Mordechai seems to paskin like the Yerushalmi, that even with respect to ona, Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's possible to be able to waive ona. So the Mishnah Lamelech says as follows. The Mishnah Lamelech says that the whole principle of somebody being able to be masne, to be meichel, somebody being able to make a tnai on a dover shebemamon, says the Mishnah Lamelech, is premised upon the notion of mechila, that if the people have the ability to be meichel each other with respect to rights, monetary rights that they have with respect to each other. So therefore, he says that this is the explanation as to why it is that you cannot waive ona, because we say that monetary obligations a person might waive. So the woman's prepared to waive the right to clothing. She's prepared to waive her right to food. So this is something which is waivable, and therefore this falls under the category of tnai shebimamon, of a tanai in the monetary realm. But something which is owner, what does Rashi say about owner? He says owner is a tsar haguf. This is something which is not purely money. This is something which is a physical discomfort for somebody not to be able to have owner. So therefore, we assume that the person is not waiving the actual owner, because one would not waive, one in fact could not waive, at least on a permanent level, one could not waive their right to physical happiness, to having physical security. And therefore, what the person is really saying, says the Mishnah Lamelech, is and the notion that Tanai Shebimamon is a way that the reason why one can make a Tanai Shebimamon is based on Mechila, is basically found in the Rashba. The Rashba gives this explanation in Ksuba Staf Nunvav, quoted by the Shita Mikubetzis, that it's all based on the notion of Mechila. So therefore, what is a person really saying when they say Amanasha Ein Lach Alai Ona, and the woman agrees? She's not agreeing to waive Ona, because you don't waive something which is not monetary in nature, which is on your physical goof. What she's really doing is saying the din of Ona, the halacha of Ona, the halacha that you're supposed to supply me with a with Ona, with physical intimacy, so that I am waiving not own itself, which I can't waive. Nobody can permanently waive their own physical discomfort, but I'm waiving the din. So says the Mishnah Lamelech, you can't waive a din, and this is a qualification with respect to the machlokis between with respect to the shita of Rabbi Yehuda as well. That when Rabbi Yehuda says that it's that you can say Amanasha Ein Lach Alai Sher Ksus Ve'Oina, the reason why it works with respect to Sher Ksus is because there a person just waving money. You can wave money, but if you would say explicitly Amanasha Ein Lach Alai Din Sher Ksus Ve'Oina, that the actual din of Sher Ksus Ve'Oina, of sharing Ksus as well, is not applicable to me. So then you have no right to wave the actual din, because the din is not subject to mechila. The din was established by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. You can waive monetary rights, but you cannot actually waive a din. So therefore, once you put the word din into the picture, then all bets are off. And as support of that, he quotes a Tosfos in Ksuvas Daf Nunvav, where Tosfos, at least on the carryover page, I think Nunvav on the base, Tosfos quotes quotes Rabbeinu Elchanan. Rabbeinu Elchanan says that the whole limitation of, or the whole allowance, shall we say, for Tanai Shebimamon, he says, when is it that Tanai Shebimamon is no good? When is it that Tanai Shebimamon is no good? Tanai Shebimamon is no good when a person adds the word din. If the person says, Ein Lach Alai Din Sheikh Sus V'Aina, the implication is that a Tanai Shebimamon is only considered to be that when is it that it is okay? It's okay if the person doesn't say the word din. But if you say that the din is not applicable, so then all bets are off. Then there's no, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no such thing as Tanai Shebimamon. The Ksos points out, even though Tosus is not explicit about this, but it seems to be pashut from the simple reading of Tosus, the Ksos points out that, in fact, if you look at the Tosfos carefully over there, Tosfos is not saying this distinction between when you say din and when you don't say din within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, but is actually saying this distinction within the Shita of Rabbi Meir. That Tosfos is saying that even Rabbi Meir, who says that you can't make a Tanai Shebimamon negin Masha Kasa B'Toyra, only says it when you say the word din. That Amanasha Ein Lach Alai Din Sheikh Susvaina. But if you would not have the word din in there, and you just say Amanasha Ein Lach Alai Sheikh Susvaina, even Rabbi Meir would agree that it is good. And the Ksos wants to argue, based on Ramban and Baba Basa Daf Kav Chavav Amud Beis, that it really doesn't matter even if you added the word din. Even if the husband would say Amanasha Ein Lach Alai Din Sheikh Susvaina, it would still be considered to be a completely valid Tanai, despite the fact that it's negin masha kasa b'tayra, because we're not focusing, as says the Ketzos, based on the Ramban, on the notion of mechila exclusively. When we say that a person is allowed to make a tanai in monetary matters, which is different from that which is prescribed by the Torah. Rather, what's the lashon of the Ramban? The Ramban says the reason why certain obligations, monetary obligations that are set forth in the Torah, whether we're talking about chiyuvim, whether we're talking about peturim, the reason why they don't go into effect when two people make a condition with each other is not because we had something that existed. We had a concrete Torah obligation and now we're getting rid of it. Yeah, in fact, you're not supposed to get rid of Torah obligations. But it's because the Torah obligation never sets in. It never takes effect to begin with, says the Ramban, unless there is a consent of the parties. In other words, that they have the right to avail themselves of the Torah obligations, but if they choose in monetary matters not to avail themselves of the Torah scheme, then they have the right to do so. Just like two people can always, people come for a din Torah. So you tell people you come to a din Torah, so you're obligated to listen to what the Beis Din paskens. But let me ask you, is there a prohibition on two parties who have a monetary dispute between each other to reach a negotiated settlement between themselves without coming to Beis Din? Is that something which is prohibited? Is that also al pi Torah? To tell if they have an appointment at Beis Din, they call up in the morning and say, we have to cancel our appointment. Why do you have to cancel the appointment? Because we settled. So you say, that's terrible. That was awesome. How could you do such a thing? Who says that it was al pi Torah? So is there such a prohibition? Adarabba. It's not a prohibition. It's encouraged. It's encouraged. We want people to get along. They can figure out how to get along monetarily without having to go to Beis Din. They want to figure out how to get along monetarily without triggering the Torah obligations. It's fine. Eden dam chaya b'chiyuvei mamon, says the Ramban, elamei ritzono shosheni. Person only has monetary obligations, api Torah, elamei ritzono shosheni, when the other person insists upon it. The other person wants it. Neither party wants it. Either, but both parties are okay with a different scheme. Then that's okay that they're okay with a different scheme. So says the Ramban, therefore, even if you, says the Ksos, Zichoshim Mishpat Simen Reish Tes, Sifkot Yud Aleph, says the Ksos, even if the parties say explicitly, Amenash Ein Lach Alai Din, Sheikh Susvilina, even if they mention the word Din, it would still be perfectly okay. It would still be perfectly acceptable, even with the word din. The reality is that what the people are—they're not being meichel the Torah. What they're simply not accepting upon themselves the obligation. And you have this throughout. Really, the Gemara says, "What is it that you're not allowed to do?" What you're not allowed to do, and this is the Daf Chimosha. Rav Pasa quotes this in the Eben Ezer Siman Lamechess B'Shem Mordechai. What you're not allowed to do is be mafkia. You can't be mafkia the Torah. You can't say, like, for example, in the Onar situation, the Gemara draws a distinction. You could say, Amenashe ein lach alai Onar, but you can't say, Amenashe ein bo Onar. You can't say, there is no Onar. No, there is Onar. I'm going to charge you more than, what's Onar? Onar is I charge you more than a shtus, more than one-sixth of what, or sixth or more of what something is worth. So I can't say that the Torah doesn't say that I have no right to do this. But what I can say is that you'll be moichel any claims that you have on me, despite the fact that Torah says this. Similarly, with respect to Shemitah, right? We know that the loans are canceled at the end of the Shemitah year. Gemara Mako says that I can make a loan to you before the end of the Shemitah year, and I can't say to you, oh, there's no such thing as Shemitah with respect to this loan. Of course there is. The Torah says there's such a thing as Shemitah. At the end of the year, the loan is going to be canceled. But what I can say to you is, I'm going to make you this loan, but Amenash Shlotish Mitaini Bishvius. I can't say Amenash Shlotish Mitaini Shvius. Shvius will, in fact, cancel the loan. But I could say Amenash Shlotish Mitaini Bishvius. I could say I'll make this loan to you on condition that even though we know the loan is Api Torah canceled, but you're not going to hold me by to that cancellation. You'll be willing to pay me back anyway, despite the fact that the Torah in fact cancels the loan, because it's all dependent upon the ratzon of the party. So you're willing to waive this right that you have for to take advantage of the cancellation of the loan at the end of the Shemitah year. You look at the Rambam's lashon over there. The Rambam in Hilchos Shemitah V'Yovel Perek Tes says Nimsa Zechayev Asimom Nimamon Shlochiva Oisoi Taira Bo Shuchayev, that the Torah says you're not obligated to pay me back, but you have accepted upon yourself that obligation. you have the right to accept upon yourself that obligation. Once you accept it, it's like you're writing a note saying, I owe you $1 million. You don't really, but once you accept it upon yourself to pay me $1 million, then in fact you owe me $1 million. You wouldn't have to pay back this loan, but you said you're going to pay it back anyway, so therefore you become chayev. But we're not explicitly dismissing outright and explicitly the words of the Torah. We're not explicitly dismissing that which is in the Torah. So we want it to be a little bit cute further to throw in another possible derech of understanding what could have generated this dispute in the halacha lemaise between the Mishnah Lamelech and the Ksos. You think about it, the Beis Yosef's assumption that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda isn't so pashut on its face. Because although the Gemara in Erevin says you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, the Tosas in Zvachim points out that this is only when you don't have a Stam Mishnah going like Rabbi Meir. But if you have a Stam Mishnah, I think that, but if you have a Stam Mishnah which goes like, I'm not sure, I think that, but if you have a Stam Mishnah which goes like, it's the Tosas in Zvachim, which is cross-referenced by Rabbi Kiva Eger on the Gemara Nedarim in Erevin on Mem Vav Amud Beis. So if you have a Stam Mishnah which goes explicitly like Rabbi Meir, so then in fact we could possibly say like Rabbi Meir. So as you recall, the Gemara in Bava Metzia had a machlokis as to who that Mishnah was going like. The Gemara in Bava Metzia about the Masne Shomer Achinam Lios So the Gemara had a machlokis as to whether that Mishnah was going like Rabbi Yehuda, because remember the end of the Mishnah said the Kol Masne Mashikasa B'Torah to know Batil, right? And that sounded like Rabbi Meir, but then we said, according to one Mahalach in the Gemara, we said, no, it's going like Rabbi Yehuda, and the Seif of the Mishnah is talking about Dovah Shebe Isser. And then the other Mahalach in the Gemara said, no, really, in fact, the entire Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir agrees that a certain category of cases, a person is allowed to be Masne B'Mamon Amashikasa B'Torah. So if you assume like that Mahalach in the Gemara, then it would end up that I had a Stam Mishnah, like Rabbi Meir. Then it would end up that Halacha L'maisa, we would end up paskening like Rabbi Meir. But if we pasken like Rabbi Meir, you have to draw a distinction within Rabbi Meir between those monetary cases where he does allow it today and those monetary cases where he doesn't allow it today. And then you would have to say, like Rabbeinu Elchanan, that basically the understanding of Rabbi Meir is that when is it that it's good? It's good if you don't use the word din, but if you do use the word din, then it's no good. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, we would say if we paskin like Rabbi Meir, we probably would have to draw a distinction between when you said din and when you didn't say din. And if you said amenashe ein lachalai din, that's when it would be no good. In fact, that would be no good. While according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you understand that the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda, so you don't have any distinctions. The only distinction that you need to draw is the distinction between Dovah Shebe Mamon and Dovah Shebe Isser. So Dovah Shebe Isser, so then the Tanai is no good. So Dovah Shebe Mamon, the Tanai should always be good. Tanai can be good the way the Ksos understands. It's only Rabbi Meir who needs to have this distinction between when you say, whether you said din, whether you didn't say din. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need any such distinction whether you said din or whether you didn't say din. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, then it should follow that that whether you say din or whether you didn't say din, you should always be able to make a Tanai Shebe Mamon. So this could chap a nafka mina, I would suggest, maybe with respect to this ongoing machlokis, whether it's the spot that does, whether it's the Gartner of Goldberg, the ongoing machlokis could be predicated upon how do I understand the nature of a Tanai of the ability to be masneh mashikasa b'tayra b'davah shibimomun. Is it a din, a purely a din mechila, in the way that the Mishnah Melech understands based on the Rashba? Or is it a din that the chiyuv doesn't get off the ground, elamer etzona shosheni, the way the Ksos understands based on the Mishnah Melech? So if you understand, based on the Ramban. So if you understand, like the Mishnah Melech based on the Rashba, it's a din mechila, so I can understand that if a person puts in a contract that they're accepting upon themselves secular law, So then you could say that this, that if the whole idea is that, that this is a din of that this is a din of mechila, so just as a person is not able to be meichel an iser of the an iser of the Torah, so somebody has no right, you can argue, to be meichel the system of laws of the Torah. So you're accepting upon yourself a different system, a secular legal system. So therefore, I could be meichel a particular obligation that I have. I could be meichel a particular dispensation that I have according to the Torah. But here, I am accepting upon myself a system of dinim different from the system of dinim of the Torah, and dinim are not subject to mechila. Since dinim are not subject to mechila, just like I can't say I'm an ashein lachalai din shekses aina, so I would understand why it would be more problematic to assume upon myself a particular secular law. While if I say according to the tzos, based upon the Ramban, that the reason I could make Tanoim Shebemamon is because nothing gets off the ground, so I'm not dismissing Din Torah. The Din Torah was never there to begin with. I can take upon myself whatever obligation I want as long as it's in the monetary realm and as long as it is agreeable to the other party. So it doesn't really matter what the obligation is, whether I'm spelling out some sort of neutral obligation, whether I'm writing out a secular law without mentioning it's a secular law, even if I say that I want to engage in a practice which is consistent with, say, the equitable distribution law of the state of New York. There'd only be one caveat to that. The caveat to that would be the caveat which is mentioned in the Tshuvas HaRashba on Chelek Vav Simen Reish Nun Dalet, where the Rashba says, basically agrees with the notion that one can accept upon themselves the norms of the society in which they live. In his context was the practice that they used to have in his day, that if a woman got married and she had a dowry from her father and then she would die without any children, then instead of the husband inheriting the entire estate of his wife, the portion of the dowry that the woman had given, the nedunya that the woman had received from her father, would go back to the father. So the Rashba says that if this is, in fact, that this was the secular norm at the time, if this is a tanai that they explicitly took upon themselves, this would be considered to be a binding tanai. But he says that if the entire reason that this tanai was followed was because the community and the people in the community wanted to be mechakes hagoyim, that their only incentive, their only motivation was because they had no interest in Torah law at all, and they just wanted to be completely copycats of the secular world that they lived in, so then he said that would be invalid if it was purely based on copycat considerations. When would it be valid? It would be valid if it would be based upon a sincere desire of the individuals, based upon the practices that they seriously think about and consider as to how they want their monetary affairs to be governed, that based on their study of different types of schemes and different types of arrangements, that they are comfortable with this specific arrangement. So as long as they are accepting a specific arrangement based on their being personally comfortable on a private basis with this arrangement, as opposed to a wholesale community adoption of secular law because they just want to be like the secular nations around them and want to abandon Torah entirely. So if indeed their intention is abandonment of Torah and just copycatting the Umos HaOlam, that would be invalid. But if their intention is sincerely because they have a comfort level with this particular particular monetary scheme, and it happens to be consistent with the secular law because these are norms that are commonly accepted in society, but they don't view it as binding upon themselves, just that they're voluntarily going into it in a particular case. So that would be, even according to the reading of the Rashba, it's my opinion that would be completely satisfactory, and that would help to explain why you have really such a preponderance of mainstream halakhic opinions that are completely comfortable with the clause which enables the selection of the equitable distribution law provision in the prenuptial agreement, and also explains as well why this type of provision is much less objectionable and perhaps even beneficial than the alternative of the possibility of individuals engaging in the non-waivable isser of actually litigating their disputes in front of the secular courts. Ad kan. Okay, did people want to daven mincha? Okay, so we'll daven mincha. Okay.
It's better for people, even if they're doing it strictly for the reason that they want to go to secular courts, if they sometimes not for them, they want to go, they want to go to secular courts. Does that mean it's still better for them to go to a Jewish court under that?
Yes.
So, yeah, because they still have what
they're
lying, that would be allowed.
Yeah, I said it's completely, we use that clause.
Yeah, but you said that's generally not enough. They don't want to do secular work because they want to
go and jump. Right, but I'm saying that's not what's going on. I don't think that's what's going on. Yeah. All right. According to the Tzos. According to the Mishnah, din doesn't work according to Rabbi Yehuda.
What would be the difference between din and shalot hamishpat and tevot and shalot hamishpat? Yes, which we know for sure that doesn't work.
No, because there it's not that's in din does not say that it does not say that the din doesn't apply. It's saying you are not going to apply the din to me. If I say the din doesn't apply, that's problematic going to everybody. But if I say you are not going to apply the din to me, so that's what's okay.